Our scripture reading this morning comes from Psalm 32, or is Psalm 32, and it can be found in your pew Bible on page 479, large print, 506, or you can follow on the screen. Hear these words. Happy are those whose transgressions is forgiven, whose sin is covered. Happy are those to whom the Lord imputes no iniquity, and in whose spirit there is no deceit. While I kept silent, my body wasted away through my groaning all day long. For day and night your hand was heavy upon me. My strength was dried up as by the heat of summer. Then I acknowledged my sin to you, and I did not hide my iniquity. And I said, I will confess my transgressions to the Lord, and you forgave the guilt of my sin. Therefore, let all who are faithful offer prayer to you. At a time of distress, the rush of the mighty water shall not reach them. You are a hiding place for me. You preserve me from trouble. You surround me with glad cries of deliverance. I will instruct you and teach you the way you should go. I will counsel you with my eye upon you. Do not be like a horse or a mule without understanding, whose temper must be curbed with bit and bridle, else it will not stay near you. Many are the torments of the wicked, but steadfast love surrounds those who trust in the Lord. Be glad in the Lord and rejoice, O righteous, and shout for joy, all you upright in heart. The word of the Lord. Thanks be to God.
We turn to our gospel lesson. The gospel is the gospel of Matthew. If you are comfortable standing and are, it is your tradition to do so, I invite you to stand as we hear the word in our midst. Jesus was led up by the Spirit into the wilderness to be tempted by the devil. He fasted 40 days and 40 nights, and afterwards he was famished. The tempter came and said to him, "If you are the Son of God, command these stones to become loaves of bread." But Jesus answered, "It is written, one does not live by bread alone, but by every word that comes from the mouth of God." Then the tempter took him up to the holy city and placed him on the pinnacle of the temple, saying to him, "If you are the Son of God, throw yourself down, for it is written, he will command his angels concerning you, and on their hands they will bear you up so that you will not dash your foot against the stone." Jesus said to him, "Again it is written, do not put the Lord your God to the test." Again the tempter took him to a very high mountain and showed him all the kingdoms of the world and their splendor. And he said, "All this I will give to you if you will fall down and worship me." Jesus said, "Away with you, Satan, for it is written, worship the Lord your God and serve only him." Then the tempter left him, and suddenly angels came and waited upon him. The word of the Lord. I invite you to be seated. Paya did the cover of the bulletin. We didn't have time to consult. It was kind of a busy week. But isn't that a fun cover? The rain. Well, okay. With any luck at all, we'll be able to flesh out just what that sermon means. When we look at the story we just heard, the story of the temptation, that it is one of several different passages that bring up an interesting point. There are parallels between Moses. You've heard of Moses? Have you heard of Moses? Anybody heard of Moses? Anybody? Okay. All right. Just checking. But there are parallels between Moses and Jesus, their stories and some of their journey, some of their what they're about. Moses was the great hero of the Old Testament. He was the leader. He called and so here are some of the parallels that we live. First of all, of course, they were emissaries for God. They were both prophets, leaders, bringing God, bringing the people to God, building those relationships. So that's an easy parallel to make, but they're both raised in Egypt. Think about that for a minute. Egypt, Moses was put in a basket by his mother, do you recall? The Pharaoh was said the Israelites are becoming too plentiful, and so he decided to eliminate a certain number of young ones, slaughter of the innocents, and he said that everyone would be killed, and so Moses' mom, he put it, baby Moses in a basket, or an ark, it's the same word actually, and he floats him down the river. Pharaoh's daughter finds him, takes him out, and he's raised amongst the Pharaoh's family. Jesus also was raised in Egypt. Another king by the name of Herod had decided that the king of the Jews was born and that the best way to defeat him was to defeat him when he was still a child. And so he orders all of the male children under the age of 3 to be destroyed. Another massacre of innocents. An angel warns Joseph and Mary, and so they take Jesus and they go to Egypt, where they are refugees. They flee death, and gratefully the Egyptians take them in and care for them, knowing that their very lives are at stake. We hear that central theme throughout the Old Testament and the New Testament, that special call for all of us to recognize refugees, to care for them, to keep them safe, to be about our ministry of offering hospitality to them. So another parallel is the mountain. Do you remember Moses going up on a mountain? Mount Sinai. He went up on the mountain to meet with Yahweh to get the commandments. What were they called? I gave it away, didn't I? The Ten Commandments, and he gets the commandments and he brings them back down from the mountain. Jesus also goes up on the mountain. He is transfigured on the mountain. His sermon on the mount. They're all reflections of some of those parallels. But the parallel that brought this to mind is the parallel between both of them being tested by 40 units. Now, I have to use units because there's it's not metric in English, but there's 40 days of Jesus' temptation and 40 years of the Hebrew temptation in the desert. That wandering time in the desert, we don't always think of that as their time of temptation, but most scholars reflect that this was their time in the wilderness to prepare themselves for being God's people as they entered the promised land. In point of fact, they said that the Hebrews failed their test. Their testing in the wilderness was not successful, and that's why Moses was not allowed to enter the promised land. There's a lot of theological debate and discussion about all of that. And you can be where you want to be, but we heard the temptation of Jesus this morning. We had it on the screen. We had it on the overhead. He is tempted by the tempter. 40 days and 40 nights, he is tempted. And he faces all of those things that might distract him from being who he's called to be. That's something about Lent, isn't it? We're in that time of saying, who are we and where are we tempted? And what will prevent us from coming clean, pure, and ready for Easter morning? Now that 40 thing, that's kind of an interesting thing. 40. You ever heard of 40 anywhere else in the Bible? There was this sailor. Well, he wasn't really a sailor. He was a boater. Well, Noah. Remember Noah? How long did Earth... 40 days and 40 nights. Pretty amazing, isn't it? So 40 is this biblical number. It's one of those... The Bible has some numbers that just kind of aren't really supposed to be, you know, a mathematical thing. But 40 would mean the whole thing. The whole kit and caboodle. Where did that phrase come from? Anybody else heard of a kit and caboodle? Any of you got one to show me? No, never mind. My mom always... What? It's in the Psalms? Is it? Yeah, it's in the Psalms somewhere. Everything's in the Psalms somewhere. Where was I? Oh, the kit and caboodle with Noah, yeah. 40 means all the time it takes to get the job done. Noah's 40 days and 40 nights, God uncreated the world. That's what's happening there. The flood is returning to that primordial state. Do you remember Genesis? Out of the void, God creates the waters and the sky. And out of that, then land begins to form and creation occurs. God uncreates. Humanity's gotten us gone astray. And except for Noah and those captured away in the ark, he uncreates the world and begins again. And then promises not to do it again. So those of you who are worried about that and buying life jackets, you're okay. That was supposed to be humorous. Okie dokie. Jesus, temptation in the wilderness, only 40 days. Here are the Hebrews, 40 years in the wilderness. Humanity is slow learners, aren't we? I mean, bottom line, get down to it, we are slow learners. 40 years they have in the wilderness to learn and to grow and to be tested. And some argue very strenuously that they failed. By the way, that 40 years in the wilderness, how many of you remember Gary Larson in The Far Side? He was a cartoonist. He had a cartoon and it shows the Hebrews and they're wandering in the wilderness and there's Noah and he's pointing off this way and here's Mrs. Noah and she stopped and she's consulting someone to get directions. And that's why they wandered for 40 years, because Noah refused to stop and get directions. It's Gary Larson. He has corrupted us, me at least. So, facing temptations. Don't need to worry about how that difference that Jesus spent 40 days, 40 nights, humanity 40 years. We took as long as we needed to take to have the test, to be in the midst of that test. And there are some that have failed. How did they fail? Think about that. Do you think the Hebrews failed in that test of their wandering in the wilderness? I believe they did. I believe it was because they squabbled. Is that in Psalms, that word? In Psalms somewhere too? Okay. They squabbled. Listen to some squabbling. This is Exodus 16:3. The whole congregation of the Israelites complained against Moses and Aaron in the wilderness. The Israelites said to him, "Oh, if only we had died by the hand of the Lord in the land of Egypt when we sat by the pots of meat and ate our fill of bread. But you've brought us out here in the wilderness to kill the whole assembly with hunger." Okay, I added a little emphasis here and there. But that's squabbling, isn't it? Moses goes up on the mount. He says, "Wait here. I'm going to go up and meet with Yahweh in the clouds on Mount Sinai. Wait here for me. Be good." He's gone for a little while. Some say a year. It's a little while to be gone, leaderless. And they, what do? You know, we don't know about this God that we can't see. We don't have any pictures of. We don't have any statues. We want a God that we can hold on to, that we can grasp, that we can form into the image that we want God to be in. A God that we have a little bit of control over. A little bit of God that's more concrete, that we don't have to have so much faith to believe in. And they make the golden calf. The golden calf. Moses is none too pleased, as you recall. In fact, things get kind of testy after he comes back. They squabbled. Ash Wednesday. How many of you were here for Ash Wednesday? Okay. Good turnout. Thank you. And again, thank you for Pastor Neil for handling this end of things. We thought of you as I'm sure you thought of us in Jefferson Avenue. As I was meeting with them for Ash Wednesday, I read a piece by a man by the name of Michael Marsh. And here's what he wrote. See if this clicks with you. I work really hard to always get it right, to have the answer, to always know what to do, to speak the right words, to be strong and in control, to do the right things, to make the best choices, to accomplish everything I set out to do, and to accomplish them with perfection. Anybody sound, does that sound vaguely familiar? Are we moving on to perfection here, brothers and sisters? Here's what he continues. He says, "It's not working. I can't hold it together. Things are turning out like I didn't plan and not turning out like I did plan. I'm just not holding it together." And he's talking to a person he's in a conversation with, and the wise person turns to him and says, "Remember that you are dust and that you shall return to dust." And Michael paused. Now, there's several ways to respond to that statement. You are dust and you shall return to dust. It can be kind of a fatalistic admission that we're going to be here for a little while and then we're dying, we're going to die, and that's the end of things. You could jump right in there with the book of Ecclesiastes. We don't read much out of the book of Ecclesiastes. If you want to really get depressed, here, you can just dig into... Let me read you a piece of Ecclesiastes. Meaningless. Meaningless, says the teacher. Utter meaninglessness. Everything is meaningless. What do people gain from their labors at which they toil under the sun? Generations come and generations go, but the earth remains forever. All things are wearisome, more than one can say. Now that's what I call a negative outlook on life. That's depressed. That's that futile view. And Ecclesiastes is included and has that as a mindset. But when we talk about the statement, you are dust and you return to dust, I don't believe it's vain or futile at all. And in fact, and Michael Marsh, the one that wrote that piece I just read for you, he said it made him realize something too. He says, I am dust. I am just human. And I've been trying to take on everything. And I'm just a human being. I'm only finite. And I can't do it all. The Creator who created me is great. The Creator who created me can do much more than I am, and I am merely dust. That's a little more positive of a view, don't you think so? We have talked a little bit about, in the last handful of months, about the world going kind of nuts. Every time I turn on the news, I'm tempted at night to stop turning on the news and start turning on cartoons at 5 o'clock. Sometimes it's hard to tell the difference, but we won't go down that road. We have an erratic leader that is unpredictable, impulsive, egotistical, self-centered, and who has control of weapons of mass destruction. Kim Jong-un of North Korea terrifies me. He is just as far out as anybody I can imagine. I just cannot comprehend such a person, and it unnerves me. Anybody else? What are we going to do about him? There's not much you and I can do. How many of you speak Korean? Well, that pretty well closes a lot of doors right there and then. But the reality is there's probably not much we can do there. But as Mark said, we can pray. We can pray. But I have to realize that it feels like we're in a wagon. Any of you ever ridden in a wagon drawn by horses? And you're in the wagon and you trust the driver holding the reins. And we're in a wagon that is going breakneck. The horses are going mighty, mighty fast. And it seems to me there's a precipice ahead. And I am unnerved, but I am assured of one thing. The one with the reins, reigns. You got to use both different terms for the same word. The one who's driving the wagon is the one who is almighty, and we can trust that driving. Psalm 32, Mark did a great job with it. There's a lot in there. It's a long psalm. I was tempted to cut it up into pieces, but sometimes fragments like that don't help us as well. But one of the verses says, let all who are faithful offer prayers to God. At a time of distress, the rush of mighty waters shall not reach them. At a time of distress, the faithful will not be inundated. There's where we need to be. There's what we need to be about. That's how we need to be thinking about it. Now, are we in the midst of our 40 days of trial? It's 40 days of Lent. Although it isn't, it's 46 or 45 or depending on, and you got to do all kinds of special theological math to make it work to 40. Doesn't matter, it's the whole thing. It's the amount of time it's going to take us to get from Ash Wednesday to Easter. You can call it anything you want. But we're in the middle of that journey, and let's not squabble. Let's not be in the middle of squabbling, but think about how we might be being tested. How will we respond? How are we going to handle Kim Jong-un? Societally, maybe we aren't. But we begin by handling ourselves.
and changing who we are and what we are about and how we are in the world.
There are innumerable things about me I need to change. I won't speak for any of you. I know most of you are very nearly perfect.
Thank you for chuckling. But it won't hurt us to grow and to get better.
Those who pray will be saved from the flood. So that's all we got to do, isn't it? We just say a prayer in the morning when you get up, say a little prayer, and then spend the rest of the day watching cartoons, doing whatever you want to do, and be ignoring the rest of the world. Is that how it works? Nope. That's not how it's going to work, and that's not okay either. There's a guy that wrote a song called Waiting for the World to Change. His name is John Mayer. I don't know if you've heard it. It's not on the pop list right now, but he's talking about his generation and how they'd love to change things and make things better and improve all of the world around them, but they can't. And so they're just waiting for the world to change so that they can be a part of the good things that are coming. And I want to take him by the shoulders and shake him and say, wait, you got to be a part of the change. Change doesn't happen by those out there. It begins with us and within us. So we can't just sit around waiting. We can't just sit on our thumbs and hope that somebody else takes care of it. But we also remember that we are dust. We can't do it all. We are not God. The one with the reins can. Follow faithfully. Seek to find out where you might stumble and be the Christians you're called to be through Lent. Amen.